Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things movie and nostalgia podcasts, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Rascal Puff, and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fans.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, the podcast where we revisit pop culture from our childhood to see if it's as good all grown up. I'm Jordan Poland Clark, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Kara Gail O'Regan.
Hello.
And today we have with us Cage Club Twitter master, Dan Colon. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. And I'm kind of into what you chose. So,
well, this is actually a landmark episode. This is our 10th episode, you guys.
Oh my gosh, double digits. Yeah. Yay.
Never thought it'd happen.
Well, I'm honored to be on your 10th episode.
So Dan chose Puff the Magic Dragon, the movie from 1978. Based on the hit song by Peter, Paul, and Mary. The movie follows Jackie Draper, a young mute boy, who, when his parents take him to the doctors literally laugh in his face and say that there's no hope that he'll ever speak again. So he goes home and he sits by himself and is sad in his room until a magical dragon named Puff walks by his window. Puff comes into Jackie's room and cuts out a paper version of Jackie, who then becomes Jackie Paper when Puff takes the happiness from Jackie Draper and puts it inside the paper version. And they go on a magical journey together, which of course solves Jackie's problems and he speaks again at the end. Dan, why'd you choose this?
I don't know. It was a staple in my childhood. I watched it a lot as a kid. I remember we had the VHS tape and I would watch it a lot, and be enthralled and terrified by it at the same time. But for whatever reason, this was a thing that captivated me as a child. And I thought it was a little bit of an unconventional choice given that it's from 78. It's a thing that I grew up with. I wasn't sure if it was something that you guys were familiar with from your childhoods or not. Because I noticed a lot of the stuff that you guys have covered already is like late 80s, early 90s sort of stuff. So I thought, well, let me throw out something that's different in the off chance that, you know, maybe you guys would want to do it. And so I'm happy that you did, because I love this movie.
Kara, had you seen this before?
I probably have. I didn't really remember it that well, though. I definitely am very familiar with the song and Peter, Paul, and Mary and that whole thing, but I don't know for sure if I saw the cartoon before. But I definitely, in my head, like, lump this Peter's Dragon, or Peach Dragon, whatever it's called, and also H.R. Puff and stuff, which is a totally different thing, just all together in my head. So when I sat down to watch this, I was expecting something a little bit different than what I got.
I feel similarly, where I was like, yeah, I guess I've seen this before, because when Dan mentioned to me wanting to do it, I was like, oh yeah, that's a movie. So like, my brain knew it was a movie. I could picture what the dragon looked like, but like, that was about it. You know, I knew the song and I could see the dragon, and I couldn't have told you a single thing about the plot of this. Dan, when is the last time that you saw this before now?
Well, it, like I said, I watched it a lot as a kid, and I think I, at some point around late high school or maybe even college, I dug out the VHS tape out of curiosity to rewatch it. So I would say that was probably the last time. So maybe 10 plus years ago. It's been a little while, but, for me.
Why do you guys think we all watch this? Like, It's from the 70s.
I have no idea. I can only imagine my parents bought the tape.
Are your parents old? Because, Jordan, your parents are old, right? And my parents are old. So it makes sense that, like...
They're not, like... Yeah, like, they're not, like, really old, but for... Yeah,
they're, like, older than most people our age. Because, like, I grew up, I think, with a lot of, like, kids stuff from the 70s, even though I was born in the late 80s, because my parents are old. Or at least that's what I attribute it to. Maybe it has nothing to do with that, but I don't know.
Yeah, my dad was born in the late 50s. My mom was born in 61. So, I mean, they were about like late 20s, early 30s when this came out. Mm-hmm. And my mom was holy shit, she was 17. My dad was 20s. So I guess it was a thing that came out when they were young, and then when it came out on VHS, they had me, they bought it, and I don't know. It was always in the house. It wasn't something I sought out, that's for sure.
I have, like, a very faint memory of watching this at my aunt's house. Like, I don't think my parents would have shown this to me. I don't know why I think that.
Because terrifying?
I think I watched it at... It's not, though. Here's the thing. Like, I was expecting this to be terrifying, and it actually wasn't, and it made me laugh, like, a few times, and... I'm not going to go as far as saying I liked it, because it's still, like, clearly made for children, which, like, isn't super entertaining as an adult, but I also...
Good thing we're doing this podcast.
It was only going to be 23 minutes long, and we've watched things on this show that were, like, much worse and much longer, so, like, I was, like, okay with going for the ride, and I kind of liked it and did... I thought it was weird in some parts, but I didn't think it was terrifying. What's terrifying about it?
Oh, when I was younger, I was terrified of the pirate. Specifically the pirate. Like, I don't have memories of this. My parents have memories of me watching this movie, and every time Long John showed up, I would hide behind the couch and peek around the couch until he transformed into the baker. For whatever reason, that was the thing that scared me. And then in my subsequent adult viewings, I think I still found it scary. I mean, I watched it last night in preparation for this show, and I think that the pirate sequence is still pretty scary, and the Sea of the Starless Skies sequence is pretty scary. And I think that they're scary by design, because we're meant to feel what Jackie feels in those moments before the scene transforms into a happier scene, you know. So I think they're intended to be scary, and I went along with it. I allowed myself to get caught up in the sort of scariness of it. Despite the fact that I'm 30 years old, I just kind of went back to that 5-year-old place in my head and just let that take over. So I think that those sequences are still scary, even today. And it could be partly that it's just 70s weirdness, but also I think that they're supposed to be a little bit frightening.
Yeah, I agree with that, that we're supposed to feel like what Jackie feels, and he's scared, so we're scared. I really like the idea of you watching this over and over again, even though you were obviously really scared by that part.
Yes. I don't understand it either. It might explain my interest in horror films today. But it was a thing I was glued to all the time.
Yeah, like, that's definitely a thing that you see in adults, who like horror movies and, like, you know, watching, like, shocking stuff, but you don't see that much in kids, I don't think. I don't know. What do you think, Kara?
I don't know. I get scared very easily.
So you definitely didn't do that as a kid.
I don't think that I did. But I definitely think that those scary sequences that you're talking about are really effective in... You know, even as an adult watching it, I didn't necessarily feel, like, scared by those sequences, but I think that they are very effective in, like, evoking a sense of fear and, like, connecting you with the character's deep, like, terror that he's feeling in that moment.
Yeah, there were. I like had more feelings about this too than I thought that I would. Like, just based on other kids' stuff that we've watched, it's usually pretty shallow, I would say. Just like not a whole lot going on feelings-wise. But when those doctors told Jackie's parents that he was not ever going to speak again, and then he just like sat by himself sad, that was like truly really upsetting.
And that's that's how the movie opens. And so when I sat down, like expecting an HR Puff and stuff kind of thing, and like the movie opens with this scene of three doctors behaving wildly inappropriate towards a child. Because like, and a lot of like the work that I've done in the last few years have had to do with disability and that sort of thing. So, these three doctors saying like, "Oh, you're never there, there's no hope for you. You're never going to talk again." Even though that is actually pretty accurate as to how doctors treated children with, any number of speech issues over the years. Yeah, it was a real bummer.
We'll see. Like I didn't pick up on a lot of this stuff in my early 20s, but I have since become much more educated and familiar on mental illness, like specifically anxiety and depression. And I was like, this kid has the most crippling depression and social anxiety I've ever seen. And these doctors are not the least bit helpful. These are the worst doctors I've ever seen deal with this sort of thing. It was amazing to me to see to realize that now that I'm 30. I'd never picked up on that before.
His parents too, like super not helpful.
Yeah.
They were just like, well, the doctor said.
Well, I mean, this was at a time where, with the doctor, like the doctor was an expert, and whatever, it was still kind of, and to a certain extent, this still exists today, but that kind of paternalistic thing in medicine and psychiatry that, like, well, they're the expert, they must know. If they can't fix them, no one can. That was very much a thing of that time.
Dan, was there anything else that felt like different either from watching it as a child or watching it as like a younger adult?
I'll say that like everything that I thought was scary before, I still holds up as we talked about. But aside from Jackie's sort of his condition, whatever you want to call it, the one thing that I was surprised to see hold up even now is sort of the climax of the film when Jackie has his turnaround. And I don't know if we want to jump that far ahead. I'm not sure.
Yeah, whatever.
Do we
Yeah, go for it.
Sure. Like when so after he conquers his fear of Long John and the Sea of the Starless Skies, and they get to Hanalei, and it's taken over by these sneezes,
Oh,
and
they're my
then
favorite.
the sneezes are the best. So then when Puff is having his sort of depression, and he tells Jackie just to get back on the boat and go, I was like, this is heartbreaking. I don't remember it being quite as sad as it was. And to be 30 and watching it, and like I was getting a little bit emotional watching it, and I wasn't prepared for that. I'm like, surely I can handle this children's cartoon.
No, I
But
agree. I was like very sad. I was like, wait, he's leaving? Like,
yeah.
they're both so sad, and he's leaving? He's gonna leave?
Yeah. And the thing that really messed with my head today, I just because I hadn't really actually sat and listened to it, I put the song on, the original Peter, Paul, and Mary song. And for the most part, the movie kind of follows the emotional beats of the film. But then it ends with Jackie growing up and leaving Puff behind, sad and lonely. Like, that's where it ends. And I was so happy that the movie didn't do that.
Well, actually, they have kind of opposite storylines, the song and the movie. In the song, it's all about, this little kid who has this imaginary friend, Puff the Dragon, and like he is getting to that to that age that keeps coming up on this show where they figure out that everything is a lie, including your imaginary friend, and you know, just grows up and out of that phase of his life. Whereas this movie, like, the premise is very different, and we're kind of starting from a very different place, and so the journey that happens in the song is actually very different than what happens in the movie.
Sure, but it's still, I felt, you know, there were some of those same emotional beats. The story, obviously, yeah, very different. They had to fill it out to make it 25 minutes or however long it is. But but yeah, I was so happy that that they included that moment, the Puff loneliness, his Dark Night of the Soul moment. And then Jackie returns and has his full turnaround. And then he's, you know, he's changed and he's going to be okay. But the song just ends on this incredibly depressing note. But that, but the movie, I was surprised that I was as emotional as I was during that third act.
Well, I think, you know, like, even compared with watching it as somebody in their early 20s versus by the time you get to our age, which is about 30, like, you have so much more context for loss and, like, what it means to lose important people in your life. You know what I mean? So, like,
sure.
When you're younger, it's like, oh, that's sad, but it doesn't really necessarily hit you in the way that, like, you're like, oh no, that's actually, like, devastating. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There are actually, so there are two sequels to this movie. So it's not, if we follow the path of Puff, I think we are meant to believe that he keeps visiting other children.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
To keep helping them. There is, there's Puff the Magic Dragon in the Land of the Living Lies. And Puff and the Incredible Mr. Nobody.
Yep.
Which I wish we had time to watch both of those.
Yeah, all three voiced by Burgess Meredith. Puff the Magic Dragon is, which you may know him from many Twilight Zone episodes, and also as later in his life, Mickey the Trainer from the Rocky movies.
He was also George in a film production of Mice and Men.
Yes, also that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until recently either, because I don't think I had a frame of reference for Burgess Meredith either as a child or as a teenager.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I was like, oh shit, that's Mickey. That's Mickey.
He has a very specific voice.
He does.
Like, I don't know what I know his voice from. Maybe it's this. Maybe, I mean, I watched those Twilight Zone episodes that he was in when I was, like, pretty young. Like, maybe, like, 12 or 13 or, like, a teenager. But there's, yeah, I don't know why. His voice is definitely in my head from childhood.
Yeah, I think for me it's this, but I didn't realize it was him until recently. I think this is less aggressive than the things I am traditionally know him from. He's here more compassionate and gentle, whereas, you know, in lots of his other roles, he's way more like Grumpy Old Man and Rocky and all those. So I think, I don't know, I think this is the only time I've seen him be quite so compassionate. It's weird. It's weird to hear that as an adult and realize it's him and think, oh, wow, this guy had a completely different side to him that I had never seen before.
Dan, what was your favorite part as a kid, and what's your favorite part now?
I think this, even though it was incredibly scary to me, I think the Long John sequence was probably my favorite. It's the one that clearly stood out to me the most. And as an adult, I think that's probably the same. It's still my favorite. I love the complete transition from a pirate, aggressive, angry, violent pirate to a sweetheart baker who makes the best cherry pie.
I think that was one of the parts where I actually laughed out loud. Like, I was like, oh, this pirate's a baker? Like a giant baker?
Like, he's this guy who, I guess, you know, he's putting up a front. Like, he's so insecure about his love of baking that he's going to push people away and present this angry pirate version of himself. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that's a fun idea. That, you know, like, inside every, like, mean, scary person is just, like, some other version, which, like, is not, that's not a new thought. Like, that's not a new idea to present, but to be like, no, this pirate's a baker is, like, so specific.
Right.
It's not like, no, this pirate actually has a heart of gold. It's like, no, this pirate just makes pies and has a different outfit when he's truly himself.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, all of the different beats of the film kind of tell that same story. Like the clouds, well, they're just angry. They're working through some stuff. They can't deal with these beautiful things, so they just block them out. And then you've got the sneezes who, you know, like they... what was the line of dialogue? I wrote it down. Why do you ruin things? Because we're uncomfortable. Like, we all know these people. We all know these people who are not bad people, but, you know, they're working through something, and they tend to shit all over everything around them and make everybody else miserable. So I think that's, I mean, generally the point of the movie, in that, you know, we're all working through something, and doesn't mean we're all bad people, and...
It was also such, like, a nice full circle near the end where the pirate turned cook. He gave the sneezes soup.
Yeah.
And it made them feel better. It was just, like, such a nice came back around. And I wasn't expecting it to. And I was like, aw, yeah.
I wish the clouds had been given sort of an arc, because they're the only ones that don't get an arc. They're just angry clouds up in the sky, I think. And they just go away, right? Jackie's retreat.
Yeah, there's only so much story you can fit in 23 minutes.
I guess. I feel like that was the one loose thread at the end. But everything else was pretty much tied up. You got Long John's serving soup, and the sneezes are now not sneezes anymore. So, and
Kara, what was your favorite part?
To be honest, I did not pay very close attention, but
I had trouble with some of it also.
Like, I completely forgot about.
I think I'm watching this, and then I would think and be like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah, which always happens whenever I watch anything. I completely forgot about the pirate part until you guys mentioned the pie, and I think the pie is my favorite part. I just happened to forget about it.
Pie is everyone's favorite part.
Of course. It's the best part.
So, were there any parts of this that we didn't talk about? Any plot points that we missed?
I don't know if we missed any plot points, but we would be remiss if we did not talk about this song/movie's reputation as a drug song.
I was checking to make sure that we got to everything before. That was literally the next question I was going to ask.
Yeah, this movie has like 5 beats, and I think we got them all.
Yeah. Okay. So, is this song about smoking weed, guys?
Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, according to my research, no. But I mean, there are a few compelling points, like that in real life there is a village of Hanalei in Hawaii known for its particularly potent marijuana plants. But all things considered, I don't think it is. And no.
Yeah, I read some stuff today about
So this was written by a 19-year-old man.
In college. 70s. Right. Well, no, and in 1959.
Like, which is fine. Like, fine. I can believe that a 19-year-old man could write this song. But, like, it just seems so, like, it's so, like, happy. Like,
it was a simpler time.
There was, like. It's hard for me to, like, buy that there was, like, a time and a place where there was, like, a guy who was just like, this is what I want to sing about. I'm an adult.
Yeah, but I feel like at least the song, the adaptation of the poem into a song by Peter, of Peter, Paul, and Mary, like, their folk music and the folk music tradition that, like, they came out of, it's not as surprising to me.
Like, right. My understanding
that,
is that
helps me.
My understanding was that the original poem written by Leonard Lipton was just sort of a thing that he had in his head, and he just kind of put it down on paper. And then a few years later, Peter Yarrow took those words and wrote what we know of as the song. And he did give Lipton credit, songwriting credit for it. But so I don't know that the song as we know it existed originally as, you know, this thing. So who knows what Leonard Lipton was going through when he wrote it. And I read that there was an extra verse that didn't make it in.
But no one can remember what it was, is another one for the drug column. Another point on that one.
According to Wikipedia, it says that in this missing verse, Puff found another child and played with him after returning. Like, he was hanging out in Honolulu without Jackie because he grew up and left Puff behind. So then he kind of goes back out into the world and finds another child to latch on to. But that song, that verse just disappeared. Any traces of that are gone. So I mean, I'm inclined to believe that this is not a song about drugs as much as it is about childhood and maturing into an adult.
Yeah, I can get on board with that, but I see why people think other things.
Oh yeah, definitely. But it was in 1963 that the song was released and reached number 2 on the Billboard chart, which was before marijuana really, like, made its way into the mainstream. Because if it had been after that, then the song itself would likely have been, like, blackballed by radio stations and stuff. So it's actually...
Because they all would have just assumed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to believe that the stoners in the late 60s and 70s heard this song, or, like, re-listened to this song under a new context and ran with it. That, yeah.
Totally unrelated, but I need to talk about it. I really think his eyebrows are really insane.
They are really insane, because I drew a picture of him for the illustrations that I do for each episode, and was thinking as I was outlining his eyebrows, why are his eyebrows like this?
It's such a specific choice, and it's a really unattractive choice. Like it's a dragon. Like, dragons don't actually, like, he's not a hot dragon. Like, it's a funny way to think about it. But he just has these, like, huge, they look like clouds is how I would describe them.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, like, maybe that's why, maybe they were supposed to look like floaty like clouds, but, like, they, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's funny that that's the thing you're stuck on. Meanwhile, I'm kind of, like, curious about the goatee thing that's hanging down from his chin. I have
he
never
had a goatee.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, it's rather scrotal in nature,
it
is, I would say.
It is. Like, I never thought twice about it until recently. I was like, what is this thing kind of hanging from his face?
It's like a double ball sack, because there's
kind of picture,
four.
Yeah. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, there's like four clefts to it. Yeah.
It hangs really low, too.
It does.
Mm-hmm. And he's got sort of a built-in vest, which is kind of strange.
Does he? I only drew, like, him from the shoulders up.
Like, he's got his body, and then it's just, like, a vest that's not, like, it's like built into his body. It's not, like, a vest that he's wearing. So I'm not really sure what's going on there.
He does, there's, like, a point in the movie where he puts something in his pocket.
His umbrella.
Like, he doesn't, yeah, it's his umbrella. He folds up his umbrella. But he doesn't have pockets.
Maybe he's got, like, a kangaroo pouch or something. He's a magic dragon.
Magic. He's magic.
He is a magic dragon. Speaking of hot dragons, have you ever seen dragons fucking cars on the internet?
Oh, God.
Nope, but now I'm gonna.
Yeah, do yourself a favor and Google that, and you'll hate me forever, but it's hilarious.
Cool, great. Oh, that's fun. I like it. Is that, like, where Transformers came from?
Maybe.
Is that how Transformers were born?
Yeah, probably. Definitely. For sure.
Oh, God. I'm afraid to Google this.
So this song was also recorded, Puff the Magic Dragon was recorded in several other languages. I listened to the German version.
Mm-hmm. You mean...
Which was sung by...
Puff der Zauberdrachen?
Oh, I'm so glad you worked hard to do that.
Let me try it again. Puff der Zauberdrachen. I think there's like a guttural... at the end there, but
yeah. It was sung by Marlena Dietrich, and it's a way, I mean, I'm not one for folk music, so I really, really liked her version a lot more. It's on YouTube it. Wikipedia tells me that there's other languages that it's in, but it was harder to find them on YouTube in all 2 minutes that I looked, so that's the only one I can wholeheartedly recommend.
In the mid-1970s, an American Jewish band named Ruach created a... Well, now that I got the, like, all the... in the right place in my mouth, now I can pronounce it.
Yeah, you really got the
going. Created a parody version of the song entitled Puff the Kosher Dragon. In the course of the song, Kosher Puff eats kosher food, has a bar mitzvah, fights anti-Semites, and finally marries and brings up his children as loyal members of the faith. This version has been noted as one of the first examples of a modern Jewish band using a popular secular tune.
Why didn't they make that into the movie?
Right? I'd watch
also,
that.
Can you give me another example of a modern Jewish band?
Modest Yahoo? I mean...
That's not a band.
That's true. That's true. Also, there was a super racist parody version that aired on Rush Limbaugh's program during the 2008 presidential campaign. I'm going to stop there. I'm not even going to tell you what the title is because I refuse to say it.
Oh, boy.
I think that's fine.
But I will say that Peter, Paul, and Mary were not happy about it. Well, Mary was dead, but they were not happy about it.
Sure.
And asserted that taking a children's song and twisting it in such a vulgar, mean-spirited way is a slur to our entire country and our common agreement to move beyond racism. Puff himself, if asked, would certainly agree. That's a direct quote from Peter Yarrow.
Oh, man, I love that she commits to this idea that Puff is a real person.
He would agree.
Doesn't he live in all of us, mm-hmm. though?
It's true, yeah.
We all have a little Puff inside us.
I like to think so. Rush Limbaugh probably doesn't, but...
That's true, no.
The rest of us probably do.
Or maybe Rush Limbaugh is just like, he's that pirate, you know, and...
And he just needs to bake. He just needs to step out from behind the microphone, whip up a few pies, and live his best life as his true self. The world would be better for it.
I think he might be a sneeze, actually. He's loud, he's obnoxious, and he ruins things because he's uncomfortable.
Yeah, actually, that's...
He is a sneeze, right.
You nailed it.
He just needs some chicken soup.
I'm going to, like, go through the next couple of days of my life, and I'm going to be like, oh, like, that's a puff, and, like, that's a sneeze, and, like, that's a pirate who has a chef on the inside.
Can I tell you my...
That's
my,
a cloud.
Can I tell you my favorite line in this movie real quick before we get too far off topic?
Yes.
Because I love the sneezes so much. When they find the living sneezes, and Jackie's like, are you a sneeze? And he's like, what do I look like? A hiccup?
That was one of the times that I laughed out loud.
I lose it every time.
Yeah, it's really good.
There is also a part at the end. You guys are going to have to help me. I don't remember exactly how this happened, but I know that I laughed out loud. So Puff like delivers Jackie back to his home, and then as Puff is like leaving, he's like jumping out the window, and he says something about the sneezes, like super randomly.
Oh.
Does anyone remember what he says?
I don't remember.
It's like very out of context. Like the sneezes have been gone for a long time, and he's just like jumping out the window, and he says something about it. I should have written it down.
I'm gonna pull up the video real quick, because if it's right at the end, we can probably.
Yeah, it's just as Puff is leaving.
I do like that he kind of walks past the camera, quote unquote, and recreates the whole thing from the beginning, like he's talking to you. Like, oh, hey, did I just see a dragon walk by the window? I love that.
Right before he jumps out the window, he like looks at the camera and just says, "Chicken soup."
Oh, that's what he says. I thought that was really silly.
Yeah, so just like without any context.
So silly and random.
Yeah.
I feel like I could also use that in my life. Just like
chicken
walking
soup.
Around, you need something to say. Chicken soup. Do you guys like this song?
Yeah, I like this song.
I once saw Peter, Paul, and not Mary, but one of their daughters, perform at the Barnes & Noble in Ramsey, or maybe it was Borders. I don't know. In, like, the middle of a snowstorm for some reason. And it was a really bizarre concert. One, because it was in Barnes & Noble, and two, because there were, the entire room was filled with either, like, toddlers or 60-year-olds, and no one in between except for me and the person that I was there with.
Oof.
But they played the hits. They played the hits.
Apparently they have more than one. I'm not too well-versed in Peter, Paul, and Mary myself.
Well, my parents had a lot of their records when I was growing up because they were old. So.
Yeah. I like folk music now, so I think that's why I enjoy this song still as an adult. But yeah, I never actually delved into the catalog of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, I think most of their hits are actually like just the folk standards and not necessarily like original tunes.
Right. I mean, that's sort of the nature of folk music, right?
Yeah.
A lot of covers. I know they covered a number of Dylan songs.
Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk covered Puff the Magic Dragon when he named one of his SpaceX aircrafts Puff the Magic Dragon. That was a bad segue, but I tried. It was announced in December of 2016 that they are rebooting Puff the Magic Dragon for a live action / animated feature. By Fox Animation, directed by Mike Mitchell, who did Trolls, which I did not see.
Thank you for remembering that, because I meant to bring that up and totally forgot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm the target demo for that. I might just stick with this 40-year-old cartoon. This is my jam.
It's a classic for a reason. Did either of you see Trolls?
Did not.
No.
I haven't even
seen Trolls.
Yeah, I haven't even seen the legitimate sequels to this particular movie. I just learned about them today, and I kind of started watching the Land of the Living Lies movie, and I didn't really like it quite so much.
Not as good.
No, it deals with a different sort of kid. I think the other two are sort of morality tales more than this first one. The second one deals with a girl who just can't stop telling lies. And then she goes to an island where there's like the little boy who cried wolf and Baron Munchausen and like a bunch of other characters who are notorious for lying. And then she just hates living on this island of liars. And I think the third one is about a kid who has like this invisible friend, and when he acts out, he blames it on the invisible friend, and then things get out of control, which I don't like so much, because these are kids just being assholes. I prefer Jackie, who's working on some stuff.
I have a thing we didn't talk about. This was, hold on, I'm going to get it right so I'm not a liar. It was directed by Fred Wolf, who directed a lot of other stuff that we've seen as children. He worked on, I think this was under his production company, not necessarily he directed it, but The Gummy Bears, Teddy Ruxpin, Alvin and the Chipmunks,
wow.
The California Raisin Show, Care Bears, Darkwing Duck,
oh my God.
Doug, oh DuckTales. Like, he did everything.
What a
Inspector
superstar.
Gadget. Yeah, he's like a superstar. And so this was, let's see, it looks like he went from like directing animation in like the 60s and 70s and 80s to like having a production company that made like every single show that we watched when we were young. Tailspin, Ninja Turtles.
Oh, so good. I hope that somebody picks Gummy Bears soon.
Wait, which guy is this?
Fred Wolf.
Fred Wolf. Yeah, okay. Holy hell.
Yeah, so he did a lot for us.
Oh, man, I feel like you could do a whole episode just on Fred Wolf.
Yeah, we could have a whole podcast.
Probably. A whole podcast on Fred Wolf shows.
Ugh, I feel like I would get tired of these shows pretty quickly.
Yeah, probably. I'm already tired of our premise. Kind of.
I'm not tired of our premise, but it is true that some of these things like aren't that fun
yeah.
to watch again.
I think
because like
when we
there's just no.
What were you gonna say?
There's just no substance to so much of this.
Yeah.
And we've done some things that like maybe if I had never seen them before, I would be like, oh, this is hard to watch. But because I like truly had like happy nostalgic feelings about them, it was fun to watch. But like so much of this, there's just like nothing there, you know?
Yeah, a lot of it I have to imagine is like sort of feel good stuff. This one I think still holds up in my opinion because it's got like sort of a universal message and something that I still kind of relate to in a way. I didn't get a chance to listen to your Wishbone episode. Did you guys like that still or no?
It did not hold up very well. I mean, it's fine.
I had never.
It's fine.
I had
but
never
it's
seen
terrible.
It. I didn't watch Wishbone, so I actually watched it for the first time as a 31-year-old human.
See, I watched the hell out of Wishbone as a kid, and I loved it, and it sort of upset me a little bit when I saw you guys were not in love with it.
Yeah, it was, well, because I thought I loved Wishbone, and was like, all of my understanding of classic literature comes from Wishbone, which is still probably true, but it was not as good as I remember it being. Still very cute, though. That dog is very cute.
That dog carries that
yeah,
whole show.
Yeah, like, there were some
really
likable
does.
Things about the show.
Yeah, the dog.
Yeah, the dog. Like, I liked it because I got, like, really emotionally invested in being pretty mad at Joe. And, like... and so, like, that made me, like, have at least, like, feelings around watching it. At least for the first two episodes.
No, I'm afraid to revisit Wishbone.
No, I mean, it's fine. You know, it's totally fine. It just wasn't, you know. Because I was, like, pretty excited to rewatch it. And then I was like, oh, actually, not really as good as I remember it being.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I look at a lot of these older shows from our childhood, and I can understand that a lot of them didn't have substance, which makes me understand why adults were so conscious about us watching educational stuff. Like, oh, because the stuff we really loved as kids, there was nothing there. It all makes sense now. Fortunately, you know, I still love things like Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street, and I still do.
Well, I mean, those are classics for a reason. Like, those are
right.
excellent.
Right. But
I would like to watch Mr. Rogers again.
I would not. He creeps me out, but like,
really?
Yeah, I don't know. There's just like something about him that is a little weird to me.
I wonder if I would feel like I'm thinking that because I haven't seen it like truly since I was a child. And I wonder what that's like now.
Oh, he's wonderful.
So if anyone wants to do Mr. Rogers, let us know.
Wistfulpod@gmail.com. Although I haven't checked that mailbox. So if you wrote to us and we haven't gotten back to you, we will soon. I was going to write up a MASH game for this episode since the content was so short. And I had no idea how much math is actually involved in a MASH game. So Jordan's other idea for a game is to play...
Wait.
What?
Wait, so you didn't make a MASH game because there was too much math?
Yeah. We talked about this.
So I honestly could not... I was like, I couldn't remember how to play MASH, and I almost asked and, like, Googled it, but I was like, no, Kara's got it. She seems like she's got this. I honestly don't even remember how to play.
I didn't really remember how to play either, so I had to, like, look up the instructions. And, you know, you do all the categories, but then you have to, like, do all of this counting to, like, get... it's not math.
I remember that.
But there's numbers, and... We've already established on the show how I feel about numbers. So I kind of gave up because it seemed complicated. But your other idea for a game was to play Marry, Fuck, Kill. So I guess Puff the Magic Dragon, the Three Doctors, and the Pirate, Marry, Fuck, Kill.
Who was the middle one?
The Three Doctors. I don't know. There's not a lot of adults in this one.
Be careful. Yeah.
It's true.
Be careful.
I think that we could include the sneeze.
Okay, we could include a sneeze.
like a sneeze or a cloud. Or the pirate.
I included the pirate.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear you include the pirate. Okay, so the Three Doctors, the sneeze. On the pirate?
No, in that case, I would say Puff the Magic Dragon, the pirate, or a sneeze.
Okay. Yeah, I'm okay with not dealing with the doctors.
I guess I would kill them. Yeah.
Okay. The dragon, a sneeze, and the pirate.
Dan, what do you think?
I'm gonna marry Puff and kill the sneeze.
So you're gonna have sex with the pirate, is what you're saying?
Yes, because afterwards there will be pie.
True. Excellent point.
I mean, you could also make the argument to marry the pirate, because then there's always pie. But then you're eating pie all the time, and that gets old. So I'm happy with my choice.
Okay, that's fair. What do you think, Jordan?
Like, yeah, it feels clear to me also that those are the correct choices.
Like, why would you not marry Puff? Who wouldn't want that kind of support every single day?
That seems a little much for me, actually. I would prefer to have pie all the time and Puff the Magic Dragon only occasionally.
That's fair. I can understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this inaugural round of Wistful Thinking games went really well.
Do you guys play these games all the time?
No. No.
No, this is our first game.
Joey really wanted us to play games.
He's going to be so disappointed.
And I listen to Janet Varney's The JV Club all the time, and she always does a MASH game at the end, and they're so much fun. But she cuts out the part where she does the math, so I didn't know that there were so many numbers involved.
Oh, I'll do it next time. I'll do it. We also have been really wanting to do a segment where we... Like, there's so many reboots now.
Sure.
So we keep meaning to do a segment where we watch an episode of something old and that has then been rebooted. But we're pretty lazy. Not lazy. We got other stuff going on. Yeah. That's like a whole extra thing to watch.
And then think about it.
Yeah. Well, if they do this new Puff the Magic Dragon movie, if that happens.
Yeah. As prime real estate for the reboot roundup.
We can do a follow-up.
Absolutely.
It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, probably.
Because I think the reboot is actually, like, the way that it was framed in the two articles that I read that were really just, you know, rewording of press releases, it seems that they're technically not rebooting the cartoon. They're developing the song into a thing. So it might be totally different, actually.
Sure. Still, I know all these kids are yammering for a Puff the Magic Dragon reboot.
Do you think they're going to, like, redo the song and have it be all, like...
dubstep?
Yeah.
are they going to have Fall Out Boy cover Puff the Magic Dragon?
I feel like that...
Or Meghan Trainor?
I feel like both of those are actually kind of dated references.
Oh, we're old. Who would do it now?
Oh, God.
I literally don't know anything about
maybe music. Like Ariana Grande. She did Smurf song, right?
Didn't JT do a Smurf song?
I don't know.
No, he did. Didn't he do Trolls? I know he did Trolls.
They're all blending
him
together.
And Anna Kendrick did Trolls. I know that because I used to teach a kid who wanted to put it on all the time when I was teaching the class.
We can have Lin-Manuel Miranda write the new Puff the Magic Dragon song.
I'd watch that.
No, but he did Moana, didn't he?
That's what I'm saying.
And it was so good.
He's still riding high on that Hamilton.
I feel like we need like I could get behind a Lin-Manuel one, but I feel like they're gonna ruin it. It's gonna be like really something annoying and awful.
But you know what? If truth be told, this is one of those properties where I'm like, yeah, sure, reboot this, see what happens, because. It's not like it's this timeless classic that everyone's going to be like, no, they're going to ruin it. You know, it's a thing that most people our age barely remember. So go ahead, do it. Maybe it could be good. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Sure. Whatever. Do it, Hollywood.
Like, if you're going to remake something or reboot or update something old, like, why not this? Because... I don't think anybody's going to care.
But I hope that it, like, I wish they would remake it and, like, one, use the German version of the song as the song. And then also, like, keep the, like, chin balls and the funny eyebrows. Like, keep all the weird stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, make it surreal and weird. Make it, like, Alice in Wonderland, like, weirdness.
Oh, yeah. They totally could. I mean, they establish in this movie that Alice and Peter Pan are sort of in that universe somewhere.
Do they?
So
when Puff comes into the room, like he first meets Jackie, when he comes in his room, he's unpacking his bag. He takes out Alice's mushroom.
Yep.
Oh, that's where the mushroom came from.
Peter's shadow,
yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Because the first image that I chose to draw after doing a Google image search before I watched this was Puff the Magic Dragon holding a mushroom, because I was like, yeah, this will be great. And then when I started watching it, I was like, oh, that's inappropriate. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was Alice's mushroom. Alice of Wonderland.
That makes sense.
So yeah, it would be really cool if they did that and they did something different and made it a little weird, but I don't expect that they will.
No, probably not. It'll probably end up like Trolls.
Which, like, is so, like, it's not like kids and adults right now, like, don't have space in their head for weirdness. Like, look at Adventure Time. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Adventure Time.
True.
That's true.
And Steven Universe, which is not technically a spin-off of Adventure Time, but the person that runs Steven Universe got their start on Adventure Time, and it's also extremely weird and extremely wonderful.
Huh. That's more for kids, right? Or is that just as much for adults? Because I know Adventure Time, kind of, you could argue both cases.
Yeah, I think it's just as much for either.
Interesting.
I think it's like softer around the edges, you know? But sure. It's a delight. It's what I put on when I've had a bad day. And like by the end of the intro song, I'm like, yes, I already feel better. Thank you, Steven Universe. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, actually, come to think of it, there's like a lot of really weird cartoons out there right now. So.
Well, okay, so like, has any of that made it into kids' animated movies, or is it all just on TV?
No, I don't think so. Well, because kids' animated movies are still happening inside of these, you know, like the studio system, and even if it's coming out of something like Pixar, which, you know, is Pixar and whatever, but like it's still a part of that like big machine that is so focused on like what is going to make us the most amount of money, you know. I don't know.
Like the closest we've gotten from the studios is like for kids is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm. Is that for kids?
I would argue that they're for kids. I mean, there's millions of toys that come out of them.
Right.
And they're, for this little bit of swearing that they throw in there, I think they're ultimately aimed at families with kids in mind to sell the merchandise. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got these movies with a talking raccoon. And then in the most recent one, you've got this living planet, which is the weirdest thing I have ever seen in a mainstream movie. And like I was familiar with Ego from the comic book, and when I heard they were going to throw him in the movie, I couldn't believe it. So the fact that they managed to get that into a major Hollywood movie is astounding. And maybe it's just James Gunn and they have faith in him, but I think you could do ultra weird, an ultra weird sort of puff movie, but it would take a really skilled filmmaker, somebody that the studios would have faith in to do it. But I think most of the studio execs are going to sort of veer more into the safe kind of bland territory.
Yeah.
So it's possible. It's not unprecedented, but I think it's unlikely.
Does anyone have any final thoughts?
Final thought? I love this movie. I can't say for if it's good or not. I'm too far in. I can't give an objective opinion on this, but I have a real soft spot for this one.
Well, that's great, because I like it when people are able to like rewatch something and say like I still love it, because it's hard. It doesn't always happen.
I think it's incredibly dark, but you know, I think that kids can handle dark. I think that me having grown up with this is the reason why I love dark things now. So, you know, kids can handle it.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that about does it for Puff the Magic Dragon. In addition to being Cage Club's Twitter master, Dan writes for TalkFilmSociety.com, so you can check him out there. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks for some spooky October times.